I'm Rachel Osier-Lindley, and this is Talk at 10. Thank you very much for joining me this morning. I'm in the studio today with Rachel Guggelberger and Reynard Loki. They are curators of a new show opening this evening at Ballroom Marfa, Data Deluge. Thank you guys both for joining me this morning.
Thank you for having us.
The ongoing dialogue between the digital and physical world provides the backdrop for the show. That's an exhibition that presents a selection of sculpture, furniture, painting, photography, video, and sound works by artists who shape web-based and software-generated data into art. It's a very interesting show. It's a beautiful show. The installation is finishing up right now. I went over and was looking at it this morning and really enjoyed what I saw so far. So thank you guys for coming in and telling me about it. So to start, the title from the show is taken from a 2010 special report from The Economist, and it observed the emergence of, and I quote, a new kind of professional, the data scientist, who combines the skills of software programmer, statistician, and storyteller artist to extract the nuggets of gold hidden under mountains of data. And that is what the artists in this show do. Can you speak just a little bit more generally about the use of data in art?
Well, I think that one could really speak to the history of art and the evolution of technologies as running as somewhat of a parallel course. So in many ways, what we see here is a continuation of, I think, a very conceptual practice of artists who use information. But of course, this is using information that is just everywhere, readily available, accessible. I think, you know, at this moment in time, there's more information available at our fingertips than ever before, which isn't necessarily to say that everyone is equally informed, because one of the advantages, too, of having all of this information is that you can be selective about what it is that you want to tap into, what it is you want to study, and you can also, there's also a cognitive dissonance. You can choose just not to pay attention to certain information.
You can Google until you find the answer that you wanted to find
exactly,
to begin with.
Exactly, yeah. And then just kind of conveniently ignore the other answers. Mm-hmm. And I think another mistake people make is that they assume that all of the information is out there, which is not, in fact, the case. So I think that sometimes people might limit limit themselves to the research that they find on the web and perhaps forget that there are other sources such as libraries and so on. But yes, this is definitely about collecting data, and it was very important for us that this was information that was really everywhere and available for everyone. So I think one can talk about these artists as all being consummate collectors of information who then take this information and reprocess it kind of according to what more, you know, in line with their interests and highlighting the interests that they have, or perhaps something that's more in sync with their own personal ideologies politically, personally, and et cetera.
I would actually, the history of data visualization is relatively new. The most common form of chart of visualizing data is really the time series, and that came that started to appear in the late 18th century in science. So it really was born out of expressing scientific research, and so the visualization of data has really come out of trying to understand discoveries and science. But and speaking of science, actually, it's amazing how much data is being processed right now. I mean, locally, actually, there is you might know the Sloan Digital Sky Survey, which is located as a telescope in New Mexico. They started working in 2000, and they collected more data in the first few weeks of their operation than had been collected in the entire history of astronomy. And that's really just a shocking fact. They collected 140 terabytes. But but it's even growing more now. It has a successor, a survey telescope that's going to be studying the sky that's coming online in Chile in 2016. It's going to get that same quantity of data every 5 days. And right now society is at a turning point, a kind of a cusp in the sense that we are producing and amassing more data than can be actually held in our technology. There's this law called Moore's Law, which states that a computer chip every 2 years can double its size in capacity. But we're actually producing, we're actually doubling the amount of data we have right now every every year.
So we can't keep up?
We can't keep up with it. So a lot of the data isn't actually being stored. We just like let it go into the ether. So it's an interesting point in where we are right now in terms of data and how we use it on a regular basis through our computers, through our cell phones, through text, and all these companies that are collecting data on us, like Google and eBay and Amazon and Facebook and so forth.
And I think something that people don't really understand is that data storage requires space. And some of the many issues surrounding the storage of data have to do, obviously, with how environmentally green it is. I mean, these require incredibly highly air-conditioned spaces, larger and larger spaces. And one of the interesting factoids that came up through reading this Data Deluge article was that if you were to translate, and I might need Ray's actual statistic on this, but if you were to translate or turn data into physical books, it would cover the globe I don't know how many times.
Actually, no, it would go, it would, I think it was,
from
it would
Pluto go,
it would,
to
it would, it would
Pluto.
Create a stack of books from Earth to Pluto 10 times.
10 times, if we were to translate it.
But actually something, that's, but speaking on the Earth thing, there's one factoid which is from that same article about Walmart, which is fascinating. Walmart handles over 1 million customer transactions every hour. That is the equivalent of 167 times the books in the Library of Congress.
So, it's overwhelming.
It's a big number. It is overwhelming.
It's a little overwhelming.
Data that you have on the data. And then what do we do with all this data? And some of the things that one can do is turn it into art. Because
yes.
You were mentioning, Raynard, that that telescope. And I can't even imagine I'm sure they know from a scientific perspective, but what would they would even do with 120 terabytes of that data? Just then the humans needed to process it, to filter it, the computers needed to extract what you actually needed. What is the end result of all that data collection?
Well, it's interesting. Those sky surveys are just basically taking a telescope to the sky and recording everything. So what's happening in astronomy, and science obviously is driving a lot of this, is that astronomers these days are spending maybe half or even more time doing data analysis than actually looking through a telescope.
They're looking at computer screens
exactly.
And looking at the skies.
Yeah. It's shifting in many disciplines as well.
So we've been talking about the extreme amounts of data that we're creating as humans, growing in our technology. And I'm speaking with Raynard Loki and Rachel Googleberger, if you're just tuning in. They're curators of Data Deluge. That's the new show opening this evening at Ballroom Marfa. There's going to be an opening reception for that show this evening from 6 to 8 p.m. And that'll be followed by a community dinner at the Capri in Marfa at 8:30. That's free and everyone's welcome to that. It'll feature a live performance by conceptual new media artist, programmer, and performer Luc Dubois and multi-instrumentalist and composer Bora Yoon, who we spoke to on Talk at 10 on Wednesday. But we're going to get a little bit more into the art in the show. And I went in this morning, as I said earlier, and was looking at the work, and it's still in the process of being installed. So there wasn't any of the text up on the wall yet saying who the artist was and what the art was. So I was looking at all the pieces and just sort of taking them in visually. And then Aaron and JD of the Ballroom gave me the wall text to look at. And it's interesting because all of the pieces in the show are very beautiful and very interesting. And then when one discovers the data behind it used to put into the piece, it adds just a whole new dimension to it. For instance, when you first walk into the studio into the gallery rather, and look to the right, you see these very large hybrid photographs. I learned they were called by Michael Najjar, and those just look like they look like mountainscapes from some sort of sci-fi universe or some futuristic video game. But there actually is a very interesting story behind the way he creates these works.
Yes,
yeah, actually,
they're photographs that he took on a expedition to Mount Aconcagua, which is the second highest mountain, the largest in the Western Hemisphere. And so it was actually a process that involved a feat of endurance. So he traveled and, hiked to the top of the mountain range with a small group, and they photographed these mountains. Then they were in turn visually manipulated so that the peaks of the mountains would reflect the stock indices. So each piece refers to, for example, NASDAQ or Hang Seng or I'm blanking at the moment, but they refer to these different stock indices. And so what you will see is the peaks, the ebbs, and the flows of the market. And in the case of the Lehman Brothers piece, for example, all of a sudden it just spikes, and then it just drops, and all you're left with is like this cliff. And that is an indication, of course, of the entire, you know, financial crash. But his works are also really beautiful. I mean, I think you can be deceived into thinking that it's a real depiction of a natural landscape, mm-hmm. Because they're very much born out of a romantic tradition, and it's really very much about the awe and the allure of nature and the ability of nature to just express itself. So it really is a combination of works that kind of come out of a tradition that is evoking the romantic painterly tradition, but then also, referring to something that's very contemporary right now, the economy.
And that whole room in the gallery, we're talking about Ballroom Marfa and their new show, Dada Deluge, which opens this evening. But it seems that that whole room sort of reflects the natural aesthetic relationship between Dada and the landscape.
Mm-hmm.
There's also some other beautiful sculptures that it's hard for me to even explain, but wood sculptures that have to do with water usage.
Yes.
And also tide patterns. And can you talk about those and that artist?
Yeah, that artist is Adrienne Siegel. She's from California. And one of them is called Trends in Water Use, Canyon. And she basically took data from a United States Geological Survey report entitled Analysis of Water Use in the United States from 1950 to 1995. And what she's done is she has made a three-dimensional representation of national water use statistics. So the statistics actually drive the shape of this sculpture, which is a three-dimensional kind of cutout of a canyon. It looks like, you know, like a huge canyon, like the Grand Canyon. But the shape of the central riverbed and its tributaries are informed by a specific categorical use of water. So, for example, the two largest uses define the central shape of the table, which is based on the line of the Colorado River, and that was taken from thermoelectric use, and that and its entire length was based on that statistic. And then the main tributary, the Green River, was taken from statistics on irrigation. And then other water uses, other water use categories such as industrial public supply, domestic, rural, livestock are all represented in the tributaries in the walls of the canyon. And the width of the canyon is relative to the amount of water used. So the wider it is, the more water is being used for that particular category. And the table height is a measure of time. The top of the table shows the water use in the 1950s, and the very bottom of the canyon shows the water use in 2000. And what you can actually see by looking at it is you can actually read the changes in water over time just by looking at its shape. As thermoelectric use grows, other statistically smaller categorical uses are swallowed into it. And conversely, water use for irrigation has the reverse effect and gradually decreases over time.
And this is just so fascinating to me, hearing all of the different things that went into this one piece that mm-hmm. itself has so much behind it, but is so beautiful. And again, it's making me think of the Economist article that the title for the show came from, Dada Deluge, where it does describe this new kind of professional, the data scientist slash artist. And I'm curious, with y'all as curators, having spent time researching the show, looking into artists to try to include in the show, what is this person like? Because I imagine you'd have to have a real interest in the natural world and learning about things and learning about statistics. But then why would there then be this motivation to translate it into art? So it's a curiosity, but then it also becomes this work. And that really interests me, the kind of personality that would create that.
Actually, it reminds me of something one of the artists said about his work. It's Lauren Madsen. He's an artist originally from New York and now in California. And he has, similar to Adrienne Siegel, uses publicly available data to create the form and shape of his sculptural work. A series of sculptures that is based on data from, say, for example, the U.S. Census, National Endowment of the Arts, Labor Statistics, Pew Research Center, polls, things like that. He said that his projects, that's one particular series called Historical Abstracts, he said that they depict events unfolding over time, and they can be taken simply as abstract art if the viewer cares to ignore the content. Mm-hmm. So he's looking at it, and you just walk up to one of his sculptures. He has two pieces in the show, and they just look like beautiful pieces of abstract art. And then you look at the didactic wall label that explains it all, and you're like, oh wow, that's crazy. That's a crazy connection. And he says that he's looking for a maximal art experience, which includes the cerebral with the visual. So I think it's these two elements that are coming together, and that's what these artists share.
I do think that, like data itself, being abstracted information, many of these works, I think you could argue that there is that kind of tenet on a visual level, that if you're just looking at it, you might see Michael Najjar's photographs again as these just beautiful, you know, images of snow-capped mountains. And then, of course, there's a little bit more information to it. But I think this is important because whether it's intentional or not on behalf of the artists, this is actually what happens with data and information itself. There is this element of choosing to pay attention to it and what it might mean and to try to understand it and come to terms with it. And then there's also this, you know, ability that we all have to just ignore it, so, or to not choose to see that side of the information. So that there is something there, intentional or not, that I think just is embodied in the works themselves as well.
And as you were mentioning earlier, we can find so much data these days that you can find something to back up pretty much any assumption that you'd already have.
Absolutely.
So there's a certain almost, while the data is so important and illuminating for us in everyday life, it also in a way, it's overload to the point of almost meaninglessness.
Absolutely.
And I think that's very well illustrated, and I think intentionally so, by one of the artists. Let me look it up right here. Who, flipping through all of these, Scott Hugg.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, he has some very interesting work in the show. And again, we're talking about Data Deluge, which opens this evening at Ballroom Marfa. There's a reception from 6 to 8 p.m. So while you flip to that page, I'll just let people know that it is from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Ballroom, and that everyone is invited. It's a free opening, and then there'll be a community dinner reception following at the Capri in Marfa at 8:30. So speaking to the somewhat uselessness and silliness of data in a way, Scott Hugg's pieces look at Gallup polls and information in those, and then he superimposes these charts representing the data onto pictures from National Geographic. And it is kind of a highlight of the absurdity of these polls and, I guess, the somewhat meaninglessness of what they really are conveying.
Right. It's also important to note that his juxtaposition of these pie charts onto these kind of like iconic images from National Geographic, which, you know, many argue these, you know, that National Geographic these are photographs, incredible photo essays that tend to exoticize that which they're looking at. So when you're looking at his work, the pie chart does not have the information on the surface of the image. You're looking at what has become a kind of reductive color field painting in a way. But then the label that accompanies the piece breaks down all of the information that is associated with the pie chart. And then you can or cannot make connections between the image and, of course, the statistics. So I think he's really, really speaking to this kind of divide between ourselves, nature, and culture, how we use this data in a way to kind of understand the world and also to shape our own personal experiences, and yet it's somewhat abstract information. So I think that here is an example of an artist who is speaking to the fact that we are just so dependent on data, and that we're also dependent with social networking, et cetera, on posting our own data. There's this kind of obsession and this individuated need to, like, broadcast our own personal data on a kind of constant streaming level as well, with Facebook or Twitter and so on. So I think here's an example of a nice conflation of those two.
And just to go into it a little bit deeper, one piece, the extinction of plant and animal species. How much do you personally worry about extinction mm-hmm. of plant and animal species? And it has the chart representing the results of this poll. It says a great deal, 37%, a fair amount, 28%, only a little, not at all, 34%. And then it is an image of the burning Everglades mm-hmm. from a 2009 edition of National Geographic. And it also notes in the wall text for his pieces that National Geographic's tagline is inspiring people to care about the planet since 1888. And I thought that was a little bit funny, just with juxtaposed with this Gallup poll information. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you were speaking, Rachel, about people's need to broadcast their own data and all the data that's being made about ourselves with Facebook and all of that. But there's also an artist who is featured in the in the show, Data Deluge, who does some work with Facebook and other things, and she was commissioned to do a piece specifically for this about MARFA and using information found on the internet. Who was that again?
Jennifer Dalton.
Yeah. She has a MARFA info station, which you can see when you walk into the show. You can walk right up to it. And can you all just describe that a little bit more for our
Absolutely.
Listeners?
Formally, it represents the information kiosk that one is accustomed to seeing when one is at a convention center or in an airport. So it's a box with two windows that you can look into. In order to access the information, you actually have to hand crank there are these hand cranks on the side. And so the drawings that she has made, which are hand-painted drawings of pie charts and studies that she has researched online about MARFA, so you are having to crank the drawings in order to get the visual graphics. So she came to MARFA, did a site visit, and then she also spent a great deal doing research online to look again at the reasons why people come to MARFA, where they're staying, how they choose to, you know, how they choose their accommodations, restaurants, et cetera, their opinions on these restaurants, and also was looking at somewhat of the demographics of the voting that took place in MARFA in the most recent election. So it's a piece that's entirely about MARFA, utilizing publicly accessible information, but it also does talk about the extent to which people really are eager to post their testimonials online, you know, anonymously posting why they loved, hated something, you know, all of these other opinions as well. But it's a really wonderful piece because of its site and situation specificity. And it's completely handmade. So unlike the technology that she is using to do her research, you have to have a physical relationship with the work. These drawings are handmade. You know, it's not just a touchscreen or a keyboard. You have to get a little bit more involved. And then to top it off, she has a visitor survey component to the piece as well. So people who are engaging with the piece can also let the artist know what they think. So there's another level there. So it starts becoming a little bit more meta.
And the survey's cover is beautiful. It says, "We invite you to become a statistic."
Exactly.
And Raynard?
It also her piece also speaks to how companies are using that information that we post online for their own businesses. Data mining or business intelligence, like retailers, like Best Buy would see what people are buying and maybe make certain adjustments in their offerings based on what you're looking at, like Amazon. You don't have to buy something at Amazon just by virtue of clicking on an item and looking at it. They're using that information that, oh, you looked at this, and they're going to use that in kind of maybe approaching you a certain way also. So it kind of speaks to how retailers are using all of that data to kind of make more sales.
And just how it's been changing over the past few years. I remember when that didn't happen, and now it always surprises me seeing something pop up in an ad that I can tell is specifically tailored to my previous clicks. Mm-hmm. And you know, a whole new generation coming up will not even find that odd. They will just be used to it. So mm-hmm. the way that it is evolving, and they're using this data, the retailers are using this data on us in new ways all the time. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Raynard Loki and Rachel Googleberger. They are the curators for Data Deluge. It's a new exhibition opening this evening at Ballroom in MARFA, and it explores kind of what we've been talking about, the relationship between data and art, and it features artists that use web-based and software-generated data to turn it into art. Something else that I wanted to speak with you all about, mentioning Adrian's piece, We're looking at a bunch of artists who use very complicated things to create this art. They're all very tech savvy. They're using computers. They're mining data. When I spoke with Luc Dubois, who's going to be doing a performance this evening.
It's actually our Luc Dubois.
Well, he was using, you know, using computers, doing very complicated things to create 3D representations of music. So you have on the one hand all of these tech savvy artists, but some of them are turning them into very than tech-savvy, complicated art, and others doing things like Adrian creating very lo-fi pieces.
Yeah, absolutely, and Anna von Mertens as well. In fact, her work, and I don't, these are not my terms, but her work has often been referred to as conceptual craft. And so she's using technology to create hand-dyed, hand-stitched quilts. And she's using a software technology called Starry Nights. And basically, she's looking at particular moments in American history. And she's done some series that focus specifically on very violent episodes in American history. And then these are rendered in these images to the scale of the cinema screens for original Westerns. So there is a cinematic relationship to these works as well. And what you're looking at is a kind of hybrid of dusk and dawn, sunset and sunrise. So she's very much playing with this idea of this kind of cliche of riding into the sunset, but also questioning very much that the ending of the day is an ending. And so she has two works in the exhibition, one that looks at the founding date, the kind of the movement of the stars at the founding of gold, and then the companion piece is at the movement of the stars at the founding of oil, or rather at the moment that Spindletop, where the oil industry was born in Texas. So on the left-hand side, you have this beautiful, glowing orange sunset that is very evocative of the promotional posters for Giant, for example. And then on the right-hand side, you have a black horizon, a gradation of black to gray, kind of suggesting the more darker undertones of the, you know, the founding of oil and the oil industry.
And those, again, were in the room that I said seems to depict the relationship between the landscape and the natural world and data. Mm-hmm. And I was particularly drawn to those, especially being a resident of West Texas, because we have such beautiful stars. The first thing I thought of it when I saw those star trails knitted in there were, you know, the McDonald's Observatory, and Absolutely. Promotional materials for them actually have very similar images. Mm-hmm. But then getting close to it and seeing how carefully and meticulously stitched together these quilt works were, and hearing the background on it, it was just it added so much depth and interesting information to something that on the surface was a really beautiful and obviously delicately crafted piece. Mm-hmm. And I think that speaks a lot to the other work in the show. Y'all did a nice job putting it together.
Thank you.
I really
you.
Enjoyed it.
We're really very happy.
Something else I wanted to talk about. We were mentioning this artist earlier, Lauren Mattson, who, as you said, his works are beautiful conceptual pieces, but also have a lot of data behind them. For instance, there's a piece in this show called Endings, which is gorgeous copper pipes, and they represent charts, 76 different charts, all different data, as you were referencing earlier. And I guess the point of it is that everything is kind of getting better from this data. It's a very optimistic piece.
One could argue.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That was really interesting to me when I was walking through the piece with Aaron over at the ballroom. But can you all talk a little bit more about that? Because it seemed a little more upbeat than some of the other pieces.
Well, again, it's about how you look at the data and from what vantage point. So mm-hmm. I think in that sense, it's another commentary on the effectiveness of data.
Yeah, well, Lauren is actually, he does a lot of sculptural work. And this piece is actually a hanging ceiling work. And it's comprised of over 76 individual pieces of copper tubing. And each piece, the shape of each piece is actually an abstraction of a graph representing a generally desirable ending. For example, the elimination of smallpox, the almost elimination of polio, the near absence of airborne lead in the United States, and the decreasing frequency and deadliness of wars since the end of the Cold War. So he actually refers to the piece as a random catalog of good news. So
a random catalog. Mm-hmm. And on a totally aesthetic level, it looks like a centipede hanging from the ceiling, and the shadow that the pipes cast mm-hmm. on the wall is gorgeous as well.
Yeah, I mean, they are, again, there are these extractions of these graphs that are hung at eye level, but the shadow does tend to project something that is akin to penmanship. But then if you also, and I really encourage people to walk to the side of it and look at it from every vantage point, because if you look at it from what the end of it all the way through, it becomes this really kind of cacophonous mashup of all of these graphs, and then it starts to read really kind of musically as well.
There's a lot of great movement going on mm-hmm. at all different angles with that piece.
Yeah.
Well, one more thing that I wanted to talk about before we go, there is a very large piece that is still in the process of being installed in the courtyard. And I didn't get that much time to look at it when I went over there this morning, but it involves these large metal squares, and there are speakers hung all mm-hmm. throughout them at different levels. And I was told that it is going to be sort of reading the room as far as movements and wind, and creating a soundscape out in the courtyard at Ballroom.
Yes, this is a piece that was commissioned by Ballroom, and the artist is Roberto Pugliesi. And I just wanted to say it's just an interesting side note. This is his second visit to the United States.
He's from Italy.
His second visit to Marfa. So he's, from
he probably has such a skewed view of America.
And after this, he's going to New York, so yet another skewed view of America. But yes, it's a large-scale piece. It's his first outdoor sculpture. It's called A Voice in the Desert. And the speakers that you're hearing are going to be emitting sounds that will be generated by the weather conditions of Marfa. So it's going to be receiving a stream of the weather conditions, the air quality, humidity, wind, temperature, et cetera, and we'll be creating a kind of sonic carpet.
It's in real time. It's connected to the web, and it's Marfa is actually a good piece for Marfa because the temperature changes dramatically here. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, it can be up to like 40 degree drop from morning to night. So I think the piece will be sonically active.
As far as my work here in broadcasting, there are some days where Marfa and Fort Davis has both the coldest temperature at night and then the warmest temperature during the day in Texas. So, no, it's true. It'll definitely be a good place to have a piece like that installed.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you again so much for joining us. I'm Rachel Lindley, and I've been speaking with Rachel Googleberger and Raynard Loki, and they are the curators of the new show at Ballroom Marfa, Data Deluge, that'll be opening this evening at Ballroom Marfa. There is a reception for the show, so you can come out and see it if you've been intrigued by this conversation. Everyone is welcome, and that reception is from 6 to 8 p.m. at Ballroom Marfa. That's located just when you're coming in the highway from Alpine. It'll be to your left, a large white building, big blue sign that says Ballroom. And then afterwards, there will be an opening reception and community dinner at the Capri in Marfa. That's at 8:30 p.m. The Capri is located right across the street from the Thunderbird Hotel. And it'll feature food and a live music performance by Arluc Dubois and Bora Yoon. So stay tuned for that. And if you'd like to actually hear from Bora Yoon and Arluc Dubois, you can hear our interview that we did with them on our website. That's marfapublicradio.org. So a lot of activity going on. I'm sure you two both have a lot to do today before the show opens.
A little bit more work, yeah.
But, well, thank you again for joining us, Rachel Googleberger and Raynard Loki.
Thanks very much, Rachel.
And have a lovely afternoon in Marfa. Enjoy your time.
Thanks. Thank you.